You're listening to WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at WERU.org. And this is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for May 8, 2008. A coalition of laid-off workers, environmentalists, human rights activists, members of faith communities, and others are criticizing Maine Senator Susan Collins for her refusal to take a stand on a free trade agreement with Colombia. The rest of Maine's congressional delegation has already come out in opposition to the Colombia FTA, which is currently pending final approval from Congress. Sarah Bigney, an organizer with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, Wendell Rafford, a worker from Irving Forest Products in Ashland and president of United Steelworkers Local 1310, and Elsie Flemings, an environmentalist from Bar Harbor, are all joining us today to talk about the issue. Sarah Bigney, an organizer with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, give us some background on the Colombia Free Trade Agreement.
Sure. The Colombia Free Trade Agreement is an expansion of the NAFTA model of trade agreements, the North American Free Trade Agreement that we've had in effect since 1994. And the Colombia Agreement is just a replica of that, expanding those policies this time to Colombia. And this is a policy that was recently expanded to Peru last fall, unfortunately, and also has in effect in Central America through CAFTA. So this is yet another in this round of expanding this trade, these trade agreements that have resulted in offshoring a lot of our jobs and pushing the standards for environmental standards and wages down around the world.
So how big of an impact can Maine's congressional delegation exert? Why have you been focusing on Senator Collins in this?
Well, Senator Collins still has not come out with a position on the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, despite the fact that it was signed in November of 2006, and so she's had 17 months to take a position on it. Senator Snow came out very strongly opposed to it, and she's received a lot of national media coverage for her position on that. And Representative Michu, of course, is a huge leader. He chairs the House Working Group on Trade, so he is leading the fight against the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, and Congressman Allen has also come out against it. So we're just waiting for Susan Collins now, and we're really disappointed that she hasn't been able to take a position yet. If we could say that the entire Maine delegation is opposed to this, that would really send a strong message to the rest of the country. The opposition is pretty strong nationally, but we really need all the votes we can get to defeat this horrible agreement.
Now, you say it was signed more than a year ago. Explain that, how the progress of this kind of thing works and why there's sort of a focus on it now, what the deadline is now.
Well, the process is interesting because it was this agreement was negotiated under fast-track rules, which is a process of negotiating trade agreements that takes Congress's role mostly out of it. So the cabinet and Bush administration, or the presidential administration, does all of the negotiating through the United States Trade Representative, and they do all the dealing before Congress has any say in it whatsoever. And then at the very end, Congress has an up or down vote, no ability to have any say in the actual language of it. So this is the stage we're at now. All the work has been done, and Congress has an up or down vote on whether to pass it.
All right, and it will go into effect immediately once it's through this process, or is there any period of recourse
positive
after that?
I'm not positive of the timeline because it would have to be ratified by Colombia as well, and I'm not sure if that vote has taken place or not.
I see. Okay, and now Colombia in particular, there are concerns about worker rights issues in Colombia. Now, in the agreement itself, it gives at least lip service to addressing some human rights concerns. It says, and I quote, "Neither party may waive or derogate from the laws that implement this obligation in a manner affecting trade or investment. There's also an enforceable obligation to effectively enforce labor laws related to those rights and working conditions." And it mentions a prohibition on the worst forms, and that's their quote, worst forms, of child labor. You have concerns, obviously, that this would not be enough to protect workers' rights in Colombia and that there are issues there that are pretty serious already.
Absolutely. So not only is this a failed trade model, this is the worst one we've seen yet. Colombia is a country where they murder trade union leaders. So since 1986, there have been 2,500 deaths of union leaders there, and even already this year, as many as 25 have been murdered this year for speaking up for rights in the workplace. So the idea of enforcing labor laws in Colombia is a joke. It's not happening. It's deadly to stand up for your rights in Colombia. And not only as workers, but organizers, feminist leaders are murdered there for speaking out. So there's no way we can have a trade agreement with a country that does this to their workers. If we're going to, there's no way that would be fair. Fair trade, it's the opposite of that. So we have particular concerns with the trade agreement with this country. We just can't do it. It's unconscionable.
Is there a good place for people to go to learn more about this? Like on the web?
Yeah, the Citizens Trade Campaign is a national organization that we work with. Their website is citizenstrade.org, and they have a lot of great resources on the information about Colombia, the free trade agreement, as well as statements from a broad coalition of organizations. There's not a single labor, environmental, or family farm group that supports this trade agreement nationally or here in Maine. So there's a lot of statements and articles about that. You can learn more. Everyone across the board is opposed to this, and we're just fighting the big industry powers that are trying to get it through. So there's a lot of really great stuff out there. We've seen it in the news a lot lately, too. You can read about it where the presidential candidates are speaking out against it, which is really exciting, two of them at least. And so there's a lot in the news, and you can read more about it.
I wanted to ask about whether or not you have connections on the ground in Colombia and what the sense is from people down there about there, because there have been, from what I've read, some delegations who claim to represent various unions who've come to the U.S. and then human rights groups questioning who these people really are that are saying that they represent labor coming to the U.S. and speaking in support of this agreement. Mm. So what's your sense from people there in Colombia?
Well, I actually last weekend had the privilege to meet with a Colombian union organizer at a conference in Providence, and he spoke very powerfully, and it was very emotional to hear his stories about what happens when you are a union leader there. And there have been several delegations from various labor unions in the U.S. And other human rights observation groups that have gone down, and the stories are just horrendous of the beheadings and the fear among the union organizers. So I don't know specifically about those delegations that were coming here, but everyone that I've spoken with and heard the stories of, they're organizing very heavily against this trade agreement. The farmers there don't want this trade agreement. The Afro-Colombians don't want this trade agreement. They know how devastating it's going to be for small peasant farmers there, for workers, organized labor there. They're very heavily organized against it and really hoping we can defeat it here. So one thing we really talked about last weekend at that conference was how can we work cross borders with solidarity between each side of this, because these are transnational issues, and so we have to start organizing across borders too.
All right. We're going to be talking in just a moment with Wendell Rafford about the conditions for workers here in the U.S. that have been impacted by these agreements, and also with Elsie Flemings about the environmental impacts. But is there anything else from your perspective that you'd like to add or that people should know about this?
Just that we're still waiting for Senator Collins to come up with a position. These trade agreements have hurt Maine very severely. We've lost 24,000 manufacturing jobs here in our state, as Wendell will talk about, since this trade model has gone through, and we see the impacts on farmers and families abroad. This is just, they're really devastating, and that's clear now. So we're really disappointed that Susan Collins can't come out with a position about that, and we're hoping that she will. So if anyone has the opportunity to give her office a call and ask her where she stands on the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, we would encourage them to do so. And you can always contact us at the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, and our website's mainefairtrade.org for more information.
All right. Sarah Bigney, one of the organizers with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Wendell Rafford, you live in the Ashland area and work in the Ashland area, obviously, and it's an area that's been hit hard by the impact of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, in terms of job losses. In a story that is in no doubt, at least partly related, the Bangor Daily News reported this morning that Bangor Hydro sending out disconnect notices to nearly half of their customers because they haven't been able to pay their bills. Can you talk about the ongoing impact of these so-called free trade agreements on jobs and the economy in your community?
Yeah, my name is Wendell Rafford, and I'm president of a local steelworkers union 4-1310 up in Ashland, Maine, and we were working for Irving Forest Products. If anyone in Maine knows about the impact of NAFTA, it's probably people from the paper industry. Our mill lost many workers in the year 2000 as a result of trade. And in February this year, we had one of the most devastating layoffs in our mill, going from 72 workers and management down to approximately 6 unionized workers on site. We have another mill about 10 miles away, Fraser Timberlands LLC, also in Ashland, who have laid off workers in their, from their Ashland personnel from about 70 more people in this one area. This is about 150 people laid off, basically, and each one of these people having a family to support. Other mills in the area have also been downsizing, laying off people. One, for instance, is J.M. Huber of Easton, Maine, laid off recently 24 to 25 people. We had 35 to 40 people in the Maine Woods in Portage. They're down for about a month, and they're running right now, but the word is that they're going down again when they get enough of their supply up in demand again.
And what's the connection between all of those things and NAFTA?
Well, I guess the big thing is, especially at our mill, we have been sending logs to Canada, and that would be us. We're a Canadian-owned business now, that being through J.D. Irving Limited, St. John, New Brunswick. And what's happening is that right now we're sending logs to St. Leonard, New Brunswick, which is a flagship mill for Irving Sawmills. Irving recently invested $20 million into that mill. Our mill, which was built in 1975, is old, but our people have done a good job to keep it runnable and somewhat profitable. We are capable of sawing approximately 500,000 board feet of random tree length, random saw logs, which are dry killed. The lumber, 1 by 3, anywhere from 1 by 3 to 2 by 12. And many of our buyers have called this some of the best quality lumber in the business. We are or could be doing very comparable work that our flagship company is doing, but again, we're Americans, they're Canadians. I guess there must be a reason behind it.
So a lot of the discussion around jobs that leave areas, as they say, and go to other areas has been about either environmental standards being more lax or them being able to pay less in the places where the jobs go to, different regulations that are more favorable for companies, and their ability, bottom line is the bottom line, to make more of a profit by doing business elsewhere. What are your concerns about the Columbia Free Trade Agreement? Do you think it'd just be more of the same as NAFTA and the other so-called free trade agreements?
Well, we've seen NAFTA come in, and everybody thought it was going to be a great thing to have free trade, but I guess free trade is not always fair trade, and just more of the same is just going to hurt us as far as what we can see.
What can workers do to organize and protect themselves and their economies and their local communities?
Well, one of the biggest things right now that they can do is get in contact with Senator Susan Collins' office and tell her to let us know how she's going to vote on this thing.
And I assume that you have a position that you would like her to take.
Oh yes. our position is for no more of this free trade until the people can sit down and figure out what's hurting our economy. And it's just too bad to see people have to move away from one area to go to another one for, you know, a place that they've always loved and wanted to stay in.
Has there been a lot of that? I assume there has been in the Ashland area.
There has been some. One of the things that bothers me is that I try to make a phone call to some of my people out there to tell them what's going on and talk to them, and I can't because their phones have been shut off.
Hmm.
You know, luckily we have a peer support group worker right now that's being able to contact these people, but
the story about the electricity being cut off that was in today's Bangor Daily News mentioned that through the winter they don't cut off the electricity, you know, because it would possibly be life-threatening, and so some people had made the decision to buy food and gas for their vehicles rather than pay their electric bills because it wasn't really a decision. It was the only choice that they had. Are you? Sounds like you're seeing people in the same boat.
Well, I know that the Salvation Army has helped some of our people who have been laid off right now with, like, giving them 100 gallons of fuel just to keep running. But as far as electricity, I haven't heard anybody in this area being shut off yet.
Well, that's good to hear. So what about the impact that it's had in terms of bringing people together to recognize some of the root causes about what's going on with the economy? You're part of this Maine Fair Trade campaign. Can you say a little bit about how that's brought different people with different backgrounds and different groups like environmental groups, human rights groups, workers groups together?
Well, I'm not really good at this because this is one of the first things that I've done for the free trade.
Well, how did they get you involved?
that's because basically I'm union president up here, and I wanted to get involved and try to make things a little bit better for the United States, I guess.
And does it seem like working together in a group with these different folks that you've been able to come up with sort of a understanding of sort of a root cause that is something that you all want to work on and address?
Well, I think we should be, because right now with our layoff situation, we're trying to get certified under TRA training for our people. And
that's when you can certify that your job has gone away because of the free trade agreements, and so therefore you get some retraining benefits?
Yes, that's right.
What's that? What is that process?
How do you? TRA. I'm not really sure.
It's some kind of a bureaucratic acronym.
Yeah, it's a trade act type thing. And our sister mill, Fraser LLC in Sardis, or Ashland, excuse me, has submitted their agenda to them, and they got turned down right off. And we're basically in the same boat. We may have a little bit better lines to set on, but we're probably going to get denied, too.
Is there an appeal process with that?
Yes, there is. I believe Senator Olympia Snow put in an appeal for the Fraser employees, and that was accepted, so they'll be looking at that again.
And meanwhile, people they don't have jobs, they're not getting paid, and this retraining would help them be able to find other jobs.
Well, they're getting their unemployment benefit.
They're still up
to 26 weeks.
And those, I think it extended if they do. I think this, what you're talking, right, will extend that a little bit.
It'll extend it another 26 weeks, I believe.
All right. All right, well.
Plus the training.
Keep us here at WERU posted on how things are going up there. And anything else that you want to add? We're going to talk with Elsie Flemings next about the environmental impacts. But from a worker standpoint, a workers organizer standpoint, anything else that you want to add?
No, the only thing I'd like to say is how proud I am to be a union member right now. And there's a lot of people out there helping our people, whether they're unionized or not. And that's basically all I'd like to add.
All right. Well, thank you very much. It's Wendell Rafford. He's the president of United Steelworkers Local 1310. Thanks for talking with us today.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
We're joined now by Elsie Flemings, the trade representative for the Maine chapter of the Sierra Club. She's joining us by phone from Bar Harbor. Elsie, does this Columbia free trade agreement follow along the lines of earlier trade agreements that basically nullify environmental laws that get in the way of someone making a profit? Is that what the concern is of the Sierra Club, or are there other environmental concerns as well?
Yes, essentially, you're right. The Columbia Free Trade Agreement does follow right along with similar previous trade agreements like the North American Free Trade Agreement. The agreements encourage companies to ship jobs overseas with lower standards, and the environmental and labor regulations outlined in the trade agreements are weak and unenforceable. So we really see it leads to increased pollution, increased environmental destruction, increased emissions.
we see that race to the bottom in environmental protections as multinational companies relocate or threaten to relocate to countries with lower standards where they can produce goods more cheaply to the detriment of the environment and of workers. Another big issue in the trade agreements is that they actively undercut efforts of states like Maine that pride themselves on high standards for environmental protection. Under these agreements, under the investor provisions, you may have heard, the state of Maine can be sued by overseas companies for environmental laws that we pass democratically. So laws like emission standards, bans on lead in toys, bans on toxins, and as we know, we've been on the forefront in this state around those issues, those laws can be found illegal according to these investor provisions. So essentially, it's the possibility of having democratically passed legislation overturned in the name of foreign investor rights. And that not only threatens our current important environmental and other public policies, it also creates a chilling effect that can be devastating to the future of policymaking in the public interest and for environmental sustainability.
Are there specific concerns about Colombia, or is it just more that this is just following along the same lines of its predecessors like NAFTA and proposed FTAA, all of these different agreements?
There are, in the big picture, it follows along these the trade model that we really need to work to address, and we need a new way of making trade agreements that that should support and not undermine environmental protection and sustainable development. They should foster the ability of local communities here and abroad to determine our own public policies and environmental safeguards, not threaten that ability. With Colombia, there are very specific issues, particularly around agriculture and the coca trade, and I don't know if anybody else has spoken to that. General, the environmental issues are sort of follow along the same bad model, and we're really looking to address those issues in the long term. In a specific sort of in general, and what we're looking at as a kind of way to bring it down to the ground in general, the Maryland just recently passed a bill passed into law around getting lead out of products. And when it was in the legislature, when it was pending, China actually sent a message to the state of Maryland saying that if that bill was passed, they would challenge it under the WTO, the World Trade Organization, specific trade provision. And Maryland did end up passing that law just recently, so it's sort of up in the air as far as what happens. But that's a real down-to-earth example of what we're looking at within these trade agreements as a whole, both the bilateral trade agreements like Colombia and also what's going on with the multilateral agreements and the provisions in the World Trade Organization. And that we really need to see a change, and we really need our federal delegation to come out opposed to the current trade model as represented in the Colombia trade agreement.
All right, well, why don't you wrap this up by saying a little bit again, and Sarah got into this somewhat, about how this, and also, I'm sorry, Wendell did as well, how this different coalition is pulling people together and how anyone who's listening, who's interested, can get more information or perhaps get involved.
Sure. This is an incredible coalition of, as they've mentioned, a broad base of individuals, community members, organizations, businesses, all working to create a new model for trade, to stop our current unfair and unsustainable trade agreements. And everybody is welcome to join, whether it's environmental issues, human rights issues, labor issues, or all of them together, which is where our coalition is coming from, and to get involved either through the Sierra Club. People are welcome to contact me, Elsie Flemings, elsie.flemings@gmail.com. And we also, I'm serving as the environmental representative on the Maine State Citizen Trade Policy Commission, where we are actively working at the state level to have a positive impact on trade agreements. So getting involved there and knowing what's going on at all those levels is crucial. So that's a good way to be involved. I'm also running as currently a candidate for the state legislature right now, and am hoping to serve the areas in my District 35 around Bar Harbor, and would love to be able to continue this work in the legislature. So getting involved in any way, okay, at the grassroots or any level is crucial.
All right, and that website again is mainfairtrade.org for the Maine Fair Trade campaign. Thanks for talking with us today, Elsie Fleming. She's with the Maine chapter of the Sierra Club.
Thank you.
The next appropriations bill to continue funding the occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan will be voted on soon. And as WERU listeners are no doubt aware, at least 70% of the country is against the occupation of Iraq. This afternoon, Mainers who continue to feel that they're not being heard using other means are staging a sit-in at Representative Tom Allen's office in Portland. And we're checking in with them just before airtime. Bruce Gagnon, the sit-in was scheduled to start around noon. What's happening in Portland there now?
Well, just as we were going to Representative Allen's office, we spent an hour on the street handing out a leaflet urging people to call the offices of our congressional delegation. They're holding signs. But just as we were prepared to go into his office, we were notified that he has agreed to vote against the funding bill, because he says that it does not have a binding withdrawal date on it. He says that he issued a statement saying that if it did have a binding withdrawal date, he would vote for it. So at that point, we decided that even though he's clearly not absolutely saying he's opposed to continue funding the occupation of Iraq, he's kind of, you know, hedging it on a technicality, we decided that we would give him the benefit of the doubt for today, track his eventual vote. But then we then moved on over just a few blocks away to the office of Susan Collins, where 18 of us entered her office, asked to make a statement, and we were invited into a meeting room, conference room, where we're now sitting around the table, and we each went around the 18 of us making our statements to their staff. They wrote them down. Then they said, okay, fine, please leave, and we'll get back to you. We said, we're not leaving. And so now there are still 18 of us here. At least 11 or 12 of us are refusing ultimately to leave, even if that means an arrest. We're saying we're waiting for Senator Collins to get back to us with a statement that she will indeed vote against any more funding for the occupation of Iraq. So we feel that we have a partial victory today in the case of Tom Allen, although it's only a sort of a half of a victory because he's still not renouncing funding for Iraq. He's just, again, just saying that, well, unless they put a binding withdrawal date. But, you know, he wanted a binding withdrawal date in the year 2009, which is still more than a year, you know, a long way away. That's still not acceptable to us, but we will, for now, continue to track how he ends up voting on this.
Well, there are a lot of people who'll be interested in hearing how things turn out there. We are out of time for today, but I'm sure we'll be hearing more on how the situation turns out down there in the Portland offices of Senator Susan Collins. Thank you very much for joining us today, Bruce Gagnon.
Thank you, Amy.
That's all we have time for today. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. If you missed Meredith's report from El Salvador yesterday on Free Speech Radio News, you can catch that at fsrn.org. And we hope to get more up-to-date report on the Xochitoto 13 and the assassination of one of the members on Radioactive next week. You can reach us here by emailing news@weru.org. Be sure to put Radioactive in the subject line. Thanks for listening and acting. Join us again next Thursday at 4 here on your community radio station, WERU, where you make it all possible.